Let's go ahead and kick off another week of our verse-by-verse, four-and-a-half-year journey through all of God's inspired Bible by opening to the book of 1 Kings, chapter number 22. There is a parallel passage that we should be aware of, because we'll have to bounce over there from time to time, from 2 Chronicles, chapter number 18. Now, when we were last together, we were talking about the first verse of 1 Kings 22. For 3 years, Syria and Israel continued without war. So that's a reference to our last story where God is trying to get Ahab's attention. He's already used a 3.5-year drought to try to get his attention, and breaking that drought with a contest between the singular prophet Elijah of He Who Is, and the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah. And of course, God is the one that won that contest. So that was an earlier attempt of God to snap Ahab out of his paganism. But another one was when Ben-Hadad, the Syrian king of Damascus, had pushed down into Israeli territory and was threatening to take over the entire kingdom of northern Israel. God stepped in and supernaturally protected the kingdom. And he wanted Ahab to know, if you will just put your trust in me, not in Baal and Asherah, you will be safe and secure. And so 2 years, two fighting seasons in a row, God had intervened and saved the northern Israeli army and defeated the combined armies of the Syrian peoples that were invading. And that led to 3 years of no fighting. Those years, I believe, were 865 through 863 BC. Verse number two. In the third year, so 863 BC, Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, came down to the king of Israel. So Jehoshaphat, we are told over in the 2 Chronicles passage at this point, chapter 18, Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor, and he'd made a marriage alliance with Ahab. Now that had happened several years earlier. Jehoshaphat had married his son to the daughter of Ahab and Jezebel. And by this, kind of set up the opportunity to perhaps bring the two kingdoms back together through family ties. So here we are, verse 2 of 2 Chronicles 18. Some years later, he went down to Ahab in Samaria. Now that does seem to be the city, as we'll find out later in the text, which is the capital of the northern kingdom. Ahab killed an abundance of sheep and oxen for him and for the people who were with him, and induced him to go up against Ramoth-Gilead. Now, what's going on with that? Let's go to 1 Kings 22:3. The king of Israel said to his servants, "Do you know that Ramoth-Gilead belongs to us? And we keep quiet, and we're not taking it out of the hand of the king of Syria." All right, so Ramoth-Gilead, you can locate it on a map by looking about 20, almost 30 miles southeast of the southern end of the Sea of Galilee. The Syrian king of Damascus, Ben-Hadad, had apparently pushed southward out of his territory through the Golan area. That's what we call it today, the area east of the Sea of Galilee, and had anchored himself at Ramoth-Gilead, which was originally part of the Israeli territory. All of that, the Golan and Ramoth-Gilead, all of it was part of the annexed territories which Moses, at God's direction, had given to a couple of the tribes of Israel. And so it effectively becomes part of the Promised Land. but it has now been invaded and occupied by the Syrians. And so on this occasion of Jehoshaphat's visit, which might actually be part of the sabbatical year resting time of the Israelis, I believe the sabbatical year ran from the fall of 64 until the fall of 63. And so it's not uncommon when you're taking an entire year off as kind of a vacation year, you do some traveling and you do some visits with relatives. And in this case, it's the parents of one prince visiting with the parents of one princess that happened to be married to each other. So Ahab reaches out to Jehoshaphat with these words from 1 Kings 22:4. He said to Jehoshaphat, "Will you go with me to battle at Ramoth Gilead?" So he tells the assembly during the middle of this great big meal where everybody's gathered together, military leaders, political leaders, the priestly leaders and things. Jehoshaphat's probably brought some representatives of his government and his military with him. And so all these people are together, and Ahab brings up the topic of our promised land has been invaded by the Syrians, and we should do something about it. Will you help me take back the territory of the United Israeli people? And Jehoshaphat's immediate response is this. Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "I am as you are. My people are your people. My horses as your horses." Now that's his physical, immediate, human reaction. But then he gets to thinking as the man of God that he is, because he is a man after God's own heart. Yes, he did make some errors in judgment by marrying his son to the daughter of these paganized people, and God will deal with that later. But he is first and foremost a righteous man who's looking after God things. And so he gets to thinking, you know what? We really ought to check in with God. Verse number 5, Jehoshaphat said to the king of Israel, "Inquire first for the word of he who is." And he specifically uses the name of the Lord, the name of the God of creation, the God of the history books of Moses, the God who brought Israel out of Egypt and brought them to the promised land. Now, the king of Israel responds by doing this. Verse 6, the king of Israel gathered the prophets together, 400 men, and said to them, "Shall I go up to battle against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I refrain?" And they said, "Go up, for the Lord," as in Adonai, that's the Hebrew word, "will give it into the hand of the king." So I believe that this is very picky wording here, that these prophets avoid the divine name. Because you see, they don't work for he who is. They work for Baal. Now, I remind you, in the time of Saul, in the time of David, and I believe probably even into the time of Solomon, which we're talking about between those three guys, something like 100 or so years before this story, it was common Israeli practice to use the generic Canaanite word Baal, which just in its most generic form just means master, to use Baal as a name for he who is. But after the marriage of Jezebel, the princess of Sidon, to Ahab, the prince of the northern kingdom of Israel, the worship of Baal, the thunder and lightning god of the Sidonians and of the Canaanites before them, basically of the paganized Middle East, that worship of the God, capital letter B, Baal, has become the new religion of northern Israel. And so these prophets are not prophets of the true and living God, but rather prophets of Baal. They have replaced the guys that Elijah killed several years previous. And so their response is, oh yeah, Baal says he's going to let you have Ramoth-Gilead. And Jehoshaphat understands the distinction that I just talked about, that he's not heard from he who is yet. So Jehoshaphat said, is there not here another prophet of he who is, of whom we may inquire? So he's like, Ahab, come on. Where's the prophets of he who is? This is Israel. There has to be prophets of the true and living God, of the Israeli God. Where's one that we can talk to? And there are. We know that Elijah and Elisha are around, that there are other unnamed prophets that are meeting together. Some had to hide out when Jezebel tried to wipe out all the prophets of the true and living God. But now under the ministry of Elijah, some of these prophets are now back out in the open again. Well, the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, there is yet one man by whom we may inquire of he who is, and he uses the divine name at this point. And then he says, Micaiah, the son of Imlah. Now the name Micaiah, that I-A-H at the end, that's the common English spelling way of showing the shortened form of Yahweh. It's a name element. And so in this case, it's who is like Yah, who is like he who is. So this prophet is apparently known to Ahab, and it's actually in his custody at this time because of the next thing that happens in this verse. So the king Ahab goes on to say, but I hate him, for he never prophesies good concerning me, but evil. Now, I have to step back for a moment and go, are we surprised by that? I mean, Ahab is promoting a pagan faith inside the promised land, inside the kingdom of northern Israel. Why would he think God would be okay with that? Why would he think the prophets of God would be okay with that? He has this bad attitude toward anyone that speaks the words of God. We know that because he said of Elijah, you troubler of Israel. So he doesn't like genuine prophets, and it's because he's not doing God's work. So he gets critiqued by these prophets. So Jehoshaphat said back to him, oh, let not the king say so. So, oh, come on. Let's not go down that route. Instead, why don't you bring him in here and see what God really has to say? So the king of Israel summoned an officer and said, bring quickly Micaiah, the son of Imlah. And he's apparently in custody, like I said, because he doesn't prophesy nice things about the king of Israel. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, were sitting on their thrones, arrayed in their robes at the threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria, and all the prophets were prophesying before them. So they're in this big, special gathering. They're all decked out in their royal robe finery, and they're in the public eye so everybody can kind of watch this happen. And these 400 prophets of Baal are out there prophesying. And it's interesting that Zedekiah, one of these guys, the son of Kenannah, made for himself horns of iron. So while they're waiting for Micaiah to come, this guy kind of takes his cue from what Jehoshaphat said and decides to put on a performance for Jehoshaphat. So he grabs something that allows him to put little horns of iron up on his head. And he said, "Thus says he who is." And he uses the divine name that Jehoshaphat is interested in. And it's not a big deal for him because he probably believes that he who is and Baal are one and the same. That one of the sad things that happens over time is that people get this idea that all the gods are pretty much part of the same story, that they just have different names in different places. But really, God and Allah, the God of the Bible and the Allah of the Quran, they're the same God. And that Baal, the God of the Canaanites, is the same God as the Jewish God, Yahweh. And this, of course, is not true. It's not appropriate for Bible believers to think or go along with, but it's no problem for the other side to do, because they are perfectly happy with this merging of all the faiths together. So Zedekiah, he says, "Thus says he who is, with these," meaning the horns, "you shall push the Syrians until they are destroyed." So he's out there pushing around with the horns and saying, "You're going to win." And all the prophets prophesied so and said, "Go up to Ramoth Gilead and triumph. He who is will give it into the hand of the king." So that's what's going on while somebody's out getting Micaiah to bring him back into this group as the resident prophet of he who is. Verse 13, "The messenger who went to summon Micaiah said to him, 'Behold, the words of the prophets with one accord are favorable to the king,'" meaning everybody's saying the same thing that's making Ahab happy, that he's going to win. Back to the verse, "Let your word be like the word of one of them and speak favorably." So it's time for you to get on board, buddy. Everybody else is saying the good stuff that Ahab wants to hear. You need to agree with it. Micaiah's response is, "As he who is lives, what he who is says to me, that I will speak." That's a good preacher. The preacher will preach what God wants preached, not what the people want to hear. Seems to me that there's something in the New Testament about that, that in the latter days, people will gather to themselves preachers and teachers that'll give them what their itching ears want. And that's not a good thing. Verse number 15. "When he'd come to the king said to him, 'Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth Gilead to battle, or shall we refrain?'" And at this point, I think we have to imagine a tone of voice dripping with sarcasm that comes out of the mouth of Micaiah because of the way that Ahab responds. "He answered him, 'Oh, go up in triumph. He who is going to give it into the hand of the king.'" Because he doesn't really mean this. He already knows what the truth is. The truth is Ahab is going to go to Ramoth Gilead and he's going to get himself killed. So if he was really wanting to help Ahab out, he would tell him, "Don't go. You're going to get yourself killed if you do." But instead, he says, "Oh, yeah, go. Yeah, go. And you'll win. Yahweh said you're going to win." But the king said to him, "How many times shall I make you swear that you'll speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of he who is?" So that's how we know that the sarcasm must have just been dripping off these words, because Ahab can tell that's not what he really believes. And so he says, "I told you. You tell me what you think, what you believe that God believes. And so he's going to give him that now. Verse 17, he said, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. So I see the members of the army looking like a scattered flock because the shepherd's gone. He who is said, these have no master. Let each return to his home in peace. So basically, you're going to die. You're the shepherd in this little story, and your soldiers are your sheep. You're going to get killed, and they're going to come home on their own. So the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil? Micaiah then said, he gives him more, because this is what God wants told. Therefore, hear the word of he who is. I saw he who is sitting on his throne, and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. So he has what I like to refer to as a throne vision, similar to what happens with Isaiah, similar to what happens with Ezekiel, similar to what happened with Moses at Mount Sinai, and also the entire book of Revelation with John receiving a throne vision. In this throne vision, it would appear that God is holding court, not just simply for his righteous angels, but also the fallen angels who apparently from time to time have to present themselves to God as part of a parole hearing. We see this also in the book of Job, where Satan himself has to present himself before God's throne to answer questions. So in this case, he who is says to this assembled angelic group, both righteous and unrighteous angels, who will entice Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? So God says, it's time for Ahab to die. Who wants to volunteer to get him there, and how are you going to do it? One said one thing and another said another. And then a spirit came forward, and I really do believe this is a fallen angel, not a righteous one. And so God has determined it's time for Ahab to die. So this fallen angel is, okay, well, if that's what's going to happen next, then here's how I would like to be in the middle of that. Because he's going to... These fallen angels are just like a lot of evil humans. They're looking for a mechanism by which they can get more power to themselves, more control to themselves. These fallen angels apparently dispute with one another about who's in charge of certain areas. And that is probably why we've got stories in pagan mythology about the gods fighting with each other. Because those gods in those stories are the fallen angels. Okay, so this spirit came forward and said, I'll entice him. And he who is said to him, by what means? And he said, I'll go out and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of his prophets. And he who is says, and he said, you're to entice him and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Now, therefore, behold, he who is has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets. He who is has declared disaster for you. So he explains the reason why all these guys are prophesying the exact same thing, go up to Ramoth Gilead because you're going to win, is because a lying spirit is telling them to tell you that, because you're actually going to get yourself killed if you go to Ramoth Gilead. That's when Zedekiah, remember the guy with the pushing horns? Then Zedekiah, the son of Kenaanah, came near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, how did the spirit of he who is go for me to speak to you? So he slaps him and accuses him of lying by basically saying, since when is the Spirit of God going to leave me and go into you? Because he thinks of himself as better than Micaiah. So Micaiah said, behold, you shall see on that day when you go into the inner chamber to hide yourself. So he predicts that something bad is going to happen in this guy's future, that he'll figure it all out when he's trying to hide out from disaster. Verse 26. The king of Israel said, seize Micaiah, take him back to Ammon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison, feed him meager rations of bread and water until I come in peace. Now notice it says here, take him back. That's one of my reasons for believing he was already in custody for some other prophecy that he made that Ahab and Jezebel didn't like. So he is now told, going to be taken back to be put in custody, and he's basically on bread and water, and just a small amount of bread and water, until Ahab comes back, because he preferred to believe his multitude of prophets that said he's going to win and come back than to believe the one true prophet of the true living God. Micaiah said, and this is his last words, if you return in peace, he who is has not spoken by me. And then he said, hear all you peoples. And that's the last we hear from Micaiah. And so he is sent away to his fate as Ahab takes the word of the false prophets, the word of the lying spirit, to go to his fatalistic appointment with execution, which is what God has determined he deserves because of his pagan practices.